Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Before we jump into today's episode, we want to talk to you about our Facebook group. It's called
Self-Care Clubbers.
So if you're not already a member, jump onto Facebook, search for Self-Care Clubbers and come and be part of our community. Can't wait to see you there. The link is in the show notes.
Can I start with one question that I really want to ask?
You kick it off.
Okay.
Well, you have to welcome into the show first.
Yes, thanks for telling me how to do a podcast.
Or not.
And at night time, brush my teeth before I go to bed. Remember to do a wee before I go out.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the show, Ruri. We're so happy to have you back on with us, chatting all about being sober curious.
Whoop, whoop. Good to be back. Thank you for having me. Sorry, it's been so long. And again, public apology for my administrative nightmare.
You're here, though, and that's all that matters.
Yes. Lauren's opening words to you were, thank God we're not married. That was very funny. Yeah. But I am so happy to have you back because you were such an integral part of our Dry January show and month. So welcome. A big welcome.
Thank you.
So this is the only thing we didn't cover in our research that I wanted to put to you, because I think you'd be the best person to answer it. Are there any downsides of being sober curious? And the reason I'm asking that is because not everyone seems to be such a fan of the movement. And some people have said it's just a trend. And that also for some people who have got an alcohol dependency, they can't just pick a week to be sober. So from your point of view, can you see any downsides to this?
I mean, this is great. This is play the contrarian so that you understand understand your customer or the society in its full. So let's play that game for a minute, because yes, of course. I mean, so if I play that for a minute and say, well, what could be some of the downsides, right, of not drinking? Alcohol absolutely is a poison, absolutely is poisonous to the body and mind. And, you know, there are not many good things that come from that. But I think many, many, many people going on the sober curious journey decide to change their socializing. Mm. And so they avoid their social circle. And a lot of people, I think, do it wrong. It's not that they're doing it wrong. It's just so much more challenging if you do it in certain ways that actually learning to change your relationship with alcohol can be so much easier. Let's compare that, for example, if like I want to get a six pack and you're like, okay, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to go try and get a six pack. And you're trying all these different things and you never get there. But what you do is you pay for a program or a personal trainer and they say, well, you need to sort your diet. Have you thought about this? These are the exact exercises that you need to do of this exact repetition. And surely enough, you get there. So I think it's like that, but I think that people feel less inclined to find support in this thing. They go, I'm going to go it alone. So what does that mean? Well, if you do avoid your social circle, if you do hide away, then it's very likely that you're going to go back to drinking, because what you're doing psychologically is that you're disassociating from the tribe, which is intrinsic to human nature. We need to feel belonging and a sense of belonging. And the tribe will drink alcohol and your social circle drink alcohol. And by not building another social circle or finding connection out with that, then you're going to feel disconnected. Disconnection drives compulsive behavior. Dead simple. So by avoiding social circle, by not getting out there, by not teaching yourself how fun it is. So there's an example. I'm sure chemically, or I'm sure from a sort of psychological perspective, there will be some things released in the brain that are good for us when you drink alcohol, but it will be tiny, tiny infinitesimal fractions that aren't made up by the amount of damage that's done by it. That's from a sort of physical perspective. What other downsides? I think, you know, potentially a loss, you know, losses of friendships or changes in friendships. There is, without a shadow of a doubt, I would have lost business to some customers if I wasn't drinking. I know that there will be people out there in the world who know, and it's not, they're not going to justify it to people because they work in, I don't know, sport. They work in an environment where they do business with people who are absolutely rock solid in the fact that you need to drink and need to power drink, or you need to get absolutely pie faced in order to do business with them.
Yeah,
that exists, and
it's part
you can't
of the culture,
argue with
that. Isn't it? It's yeah. part of a work.
I mean, China, it's huge. China is huge. You could look at the rural. You could look at rural places, and you could say, well, somebody not drinking, you know, west coast of Scotland, which actually has one of the highest increases globally in alcohol-related deaths in the last 5 years. If you could look at certain areas like that, you'd be like, it would be very difficult. If you don't build an online presence, everyone drinks. There isn't really places to go or things to do that don't involve drinking.
Yeah.
In certain rural places. So, yeah. So, but let's label that on the other side of, in reality, no. I mean, if you're asking me the question, are there any downsides? No, you asked me to try and find some.
Yeah. Okay. She's good like that.
And I think, again, the journey to truthfully changing your relationship with alcohol, which I believe firmly should be the purpose of everyone who's trying to stop drinking or be sober curious. Okay. Because in a way, some people just like to have a drink. And that's fine. You know, if you can have a drink and stop at one, or, you know, you can take it or leave it, and that's where you are. I think that's an amazing place. I think many, many people in the world want to get there. Mm. I think if you're somebody who binge drinks, if you're somebody who is finding that you've had this day and that day and another day, and that you need alcohol to take the edge off, if there's any of that kind of association going on for you, then my word to you are that this is a gift. The gift is that compulsive behavior is showing up in your life. This is alcohol we're talking about. We could be talking about food or mindlessly scrolling Netflix, social media, or that compulsive behavior is showing up in your life, and that compulsive behavior is really a redirection that there's stuff that you need to sort out in your life, unfortunately. And that's the work, trauma, things you've got on, lack of meaning and purpose, not enough connection. I've gone down a rabbit hole now. You're never going to be able to speak again.
Yes, we are.
And my AI is telling me that I'm talking too fast.
I was just going to say that when you were talking about the sort of social culture of drinking, it's a funny thing because we're so blasé as a society about drinking. But if you said to your work colleagues or someone you were trying to pitch for a job, hey, let's go to a bar and all take heroin all night, or let's go and smoke 80 cigarettes every night this week because that's what we do, why are we so utterly kind of blasé about alcohol?
Well, it's just taking a long time for the truth of alcohol to come out. You know, when the truth of cigarettes came out, and also it was a massive public health crisis and all of those things. When the truth of cigarettes came out and society shifted, it shifted. You know, people don't really want to smoke is the general thing. Whereas alcohol is still very, very much glamorized. This is not slowing down. Celebrities everywhere are grabbing a bottle of something and putting their face on it. And that is like the latest fad. So
yeah.
If you want to be cool, if you want to be sexy, that marketing is still happening.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at alcohol consumption pre-pandemic, if you look at alcohol consumption in the UK as an example, the UK was one of the early adopters of change of alcohol consumption. And the reason why that is we had such a strong binge culture. A binge culture is very public and usually very costly. So you see it on the streets, you see it in damage. It costs the government. It's expensive for the NHS. There's people showing up in there. So that's what binge culture is. But for daily drinking, right, which is what we see in Mediterranean countries, for instance, Germany, which is the highest alcohol per capita in Europe, is Germany. That's perfectly okay. It doesn't come out in A&E issues or social unrest, right? But they're drinking at unbelievably high levels and growing. So what happened is we had binge culture in the UK. And then in 2004, that really started to change. And that was peak booze for the UK prior pandemic. It was peak booze in the UK. And what we saw was like a 20% decrease in alcohol consumption in the UK over the following decade. So that has been really interesting to see society in the UK change and that idea of change. And this is why we've been the sort of birthplace for alcohol-free drinks and, well, not the birthplace, but certainly the one of the leaders globally in the production of alcohol-free drinks. I think that's very exciting, and it's a very interesting time to be changing your relationship with alcohol, certainly in the UK. My AI has said, you've said a lot, consider pausing for now.
AI. I would like your definition of what Sober Curious is, because obviously it's quite a new movement, or it's hit us fairly recently, and I think there's probably a lot of different definitions around, but I'd really like to hear from you. And also, there's two parts to this question. What do you think about this Sober Curious movement?
Well, a few things. Great. Amazing. Well done for anyone who's thinking about being sober. And I love seeing the rise of that. And I think that is a tiny, tiny fraction of the market of people who are thinking about changing their relationship with alcohol, which is what I do. So what we saw through all of our research is that for the last 8 years, we've been selling a product which helps people take a break from drinking or stop drinking. And what all our research showed is that that's not what people want. What people realize is alcohol is causing significant enough issue that they feel like they have to stop drinking. But actually, what they really want to do is control their drinking. They want to reduce.
And can I ask a question in the middle of this question? Just on that, on the back of that, is taking a break as effective as quitting?
Okay, we'll come on to that.
Okay.
There's some really interesting thing about that and what we've learned, and something it's still a good thing, but something I regret. So we'll come back onto that.
Okay.
When you remind me. So the idea really is that for me, I believe that prevention should always swim upstream. Okay, so we've constantly got to be trying to get people earlier, not when they've fallen off the edge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if this is rehab and recovery and addiction down here, then we are constantly trying to get to the first moment they ever try a drink and go, you know what, I don't really want that. Oh, can we get them there? You know, as an example, to steer it. So that prevention should always swim upstream. And for me, what we saw was that people would be thinking about controlling or reducing. I wish I could just stop at one. Why did I have so many? How come I drink so fast? Right? These things are going on the next day in the anxiety for years, years and years for some people before they're like, you know what, I'm going to stop drinking. Now, this is separate to the people who are thinking, do you know what? I quite like this idea of Sober Curious over here. That's kind of different, because you could be a light drinker who's got no problem at all, and you just think, why am I bothering with this crap? You know, it doesn't bring me anything, which is kind of what you've said about your choice and what you're going to do. So if this is, that's one way to look at it. But really, I'm talking about the people who feel, hang on, this is causing me more trouble than I realize. Then I think for them, it's about getting control. Now, the other thing is this whole idea of come and be sober, that is stopping them from getting the support they need. I don't want to be sober. I don't want to not drink. That's not what I want. And so they don't go and seek help. They're stuck in this place of trying to control their own drinking, feeling like there's no support. And that is really what our focus in. It's really to help people with this part of control. Now, sell people what they want, but give them what they need, because I absolutely emphatically believe that the fastest way to get control is by taking a break, right? It's like being in a toxic relationship with something or a toxic relationship. You just don't see what it's really doing to you until you separate from it entirely. Yeah. And also, I also know that when you take a break from alcohol, you're being given the tools, the exact tools that you need to counter this. You're given clarity, energy, focus, more productivity. You're given a better sense of self and understanding. You can hear these emotions again, right? And these are the tools that you need to start making changes in your life, right? Which is why this alcohol has come up. So the abstinence bit absolutely is a key component, I think, of helping people change their relationship with alcohol. That being said, there is some really a growing body of evidence that's showing that cutting back, helping people with alcohol use disorder to cut back, is proving to be successful over the long term. So you can cut back. It's not just about not drinking. Lastly, and this is the thing we discovered, we saw so many people, thousands, tens of thousands of people come and do a 1 year no beer challenge, 28 days, 90 days, a year, okay, and get all of these benefits, change my life, I feel amazing, blah, 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 I feel so good. And then yet come the pandemic or something else, and they not only go back to problem drinking, but they go back to worse problem drinking, right? So yes, I believe that abstinence is the best way, or is a key part in trying to get control, but control is not a product of abstinence. And this is key. And this is what we see again and again, is so many people do dry January or just stop doing a compulsive behavior. Guys, you are not going to change the factors in your life that are causing a compulsive behavior just by not drinking.
Yeah.
Like, and this is the thing, is it's a gift, but really what I'm asking or saying to everyone is, use this gift to work on your shit. And that's the key thing. You've got to work on your stuff. You've got to find out, you know, if I look at the core areas that we see and understand to be driving this behavior, environment, really important. Who you spend your time with, how they interact with you, stuff like that. Relationships, key, especially your key relationships, you know, partner, things like that. If they're heavy drinking or if they're, right, that's really key. It's got to be aligned. Meaning and purpose. If you are not aligned to your sense of meaning and purpose, then numbing will be a part of your life, right? You have to have a sense of meaning. Trauma. All compulsive behavior is a response to a trauma. Now, most people, or a lot of people, go, well, I don't have any trauma. You do. Trauma is in the eye of the beholder. It's usually stuff that happened to you between 0 and 7 when you didn't have a conscience. You just wrote 100% of information. You made some decisions about yourself from moments that you perceived and you didn't understand. And so when we coach our high-level customers through this, our high-level, we have a top-level program for really for business owners, senior leaders, things like that. And we take them through our trauma modality. I've never not found trauma. And they're not conscious of it. They don't know what it is. But when you help them change that, it's life-changing. So anyway, long waffle. There are these core areas, and you must do the work if you want compulsive behavior. And you don't just want to pick up something else, Netflix, sugar, caffeine, etc.
So perhaps this sober curious movement is a really positive, going in line with everything you're saying, it's really positive because it's not suggesting sobriety, full-on sobriety. It's just suggesting be mindful, be curious about it, ask yourself questions. Why are you drinking? Is it bringing anything good? So is it a thumbs up from you that you, is the 100% movement happening?
Anything that helps start get awareness of this relationship with alcohol, society's relationship with alcohol, is 100% a good thing. And so that is what I think. I think, you know, trying to understand what our drinking is about, you know, that really it's a product of brainwashing of marketing over decades and decades and decades. And that I look back to that amazing Health Education Board Scotland advert. It's a classic. And this cartoon image of a girl is walking through town, and this narrator is talking about how everyone chews on these blue sticks, right? And they're chewing on the blue sticks and it makes their breath smell. It's aimed at smoking, right? About how it's totally disgusting. There's nothing but, and suddenly this girl one day just goes, ugh, this tastes boggin', in a totally Scottish accent. And it's like, yeah, that's the moment when you got awareness of like, hang on a minute, what are we doing here? So I think anything that helps us get better awareness and be honest about ourselves, about alcohol.
Lots of people, most people, many people believe they need alcohol, a drink, to socialize, or because they've had a stressful day.
Yeah.
How what I'm looking for, I suppose, are a couple of tips to help people change that belief system or that thought process.
And also, what if they don't want to change that?
Well, they ain't going to be so curious, are they?
No, I know, but everything that you're saying, you know, alcohol is problematic to our culture, it's problematic to our health, right? So everyone's going to be better off to drink less.
Yes.
Everyone. Well, that is a fact. You can argue it all you like, that is a fact. So people that, everyone needs to drink less. So, and if they don't want to, like, what do you do with that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You'll need to cut that again because what was the summary of the question?
What tips have you got to change the belief
that
you need alcohol to help a stressful day or go into a social situation?
Got it. Let's talk about stressful day. If trauma is the source of compulsive behavior, then stress is the bullet train that drives that compulsive behavior into the moment. Okay. So high levels of stress in your life, you're going to have compulsive behavior. It's going to be there. You're going to want to binge watch Netflix, scroll through social media, have a drink. You need to. The higher level of stress you have, the more numbing out you will need to do. However, this doesn't mean that all high-performing executives and people like that need to go and meditate in a cave all day or get rid of their job or any of those things. But what it does mean is that we should be teaching stress management tools to kids at school. We should all be taught how to manage our stress better, because when we, again, in our high-level coaching programs, attach this super cool piece of technology, which allows us to remotely monitor our participants all over the world, we can see their heart rate within minute by minute, whether they're in sympathetic or parasympathetic. And, you know, what we see is we see a business executive who comes out of a board meeting, and they're extremely stressed in that board meeting. And we know what they should do immediately coming out of that. It would take them 30 seconds to change their state so that they can then recover for the rest of the day, right?
What should they do?
I'll come there. to get that state change means that the whole rest of the afternoon through their day, they're recovering, but still working at a high level. If they don't do that, then they're sitting there in sympathetic time. Now, what happens is people then get to the end of the day, they've been in sympathetic nervous system the whole way. And again, trauma causes a dysregulated nervous system. So you're much more likely to be in fight or flight all day if you have trauma. And then what you do is need to take the edge off, which is actually partly from the trauma, partly from the stress. But guess what alcohol does? It literally stops your system from going into parasympathetic once again. So when you're sleeping, you're not resting. And so we show these graphs to people, which is just absolutely bright red the whole way through. And it's like, look what's happening to your brain, to your organs, to your body, to your mind. Like, you are not getting any recovery. This is all inflammation and causing problems, like shortening your lifetime. The question is what do you do? It's so simple. So if you look at NSDR protocols and what I'm sure the Andrew Huberman podcast, you know, amazing neuroscience podcast, what they've showing now in dealing with stress is an NSDR protocol is basically a body scan. It's a body scan yoga nidra meditation. Not everyone can do that immediately coming out of a meeting. But what you can do is a bit of breath work. So there are two that are now scientifically shown to change that sympathetic nervous system so rapidly from sympathetic to parasympathetic. The first one is like this. So simple. It's a long intake with a one top up sharp, followed by a long slow exhale. So I'll just do that for you now. It's like this.
Oh.
Do that 5-10 times and you will push your system back into parasympathetic. And the other one, which you do need to go and be careful, have somebody with you, just because, you know, it can be quite shocking to the brain to begin with. You'll have seen some of the stuff on Wim Hof breathing, but it's basically hyperventilating 20 times and then holding your breath on the low. So you're going to do that with me now? Do you want to do it?
Okay.
So we're going to hyperventilate.
Both have low blood pressure, by the way. So if we pass out, don't call an ambulance because there aren't any. So.
Oh, yeah. Good point. We're going in, out. We're going to do it 20 times and then we're going to hold at the bottom. Okay. You ready? And it's fast. So 3, 2, 1. buzz.
I don't like that. I've got a head rush.
Oh, yeah, big head rush.
Oh, don't like that. That's a funny old thing, that.
Oh, I've got head rush.
That's another reset of the... Everyone's still alive over there?
We're still breathing.
It's amazing what you can do with the breath. I mean, Wim Hof, you know, has... I can't remember this exact story. I'm going to mess it up. But, you know, he under scientific clinical study, injected with an illness, uses breath work to fight off the illness, and has demonstrated his ability to do that. This is the guy who, you know, Iceman, who walks up mountains and, yeah, you know. So anyway, this breath work introduced into your day, interlaced straight after a meeting, just do some breath work. But, you know, also the sensible things. Walk to the park, put on the headphones and just do 5 minutes of breathing or a bit of meditation. Break up the day, try and do yoga at lunch. This is how you deal with stress in a much greater fashion, and therefore don't feel like you need a drink at the end of the day.
Okay.
That was a very long-winded answer to the original question, which was, what are the things? And that's just one element of how you reduce the need for a drink.
And the second bit, so that's how to deal with the, oh God, I've had a stressful day, need a drink.
I need to highlight something there, because I think it's really important what you've said, Rory, is that you're not, you know, the alcohol is just the reaction. It's the reaction to whatever's going on, but actually treat the problem, treat the stress, look at the stress, de-stress yourself, meditate, go for a walk, spend time with your dog, you know, reach out to a loved one, however you need to de-stress. Don't turn to the alcohol because it's the quickest, easiest thing that you can think of. Actually treat the problem. I love it.
Just talking about that, if we look at those as underlying things, again, let's talk about connection. Okay, so at the moment, your only source of connection is either having a drink with your colleagues after work or going out with your friends and on a Friday and Saturday. And then you want to stop drinking or you want to drink less, but you're not doing anything about that. So what you need to do is, you know, get some pals who want to go climbing on a Friday, right? New thing, exciting. Go and buy some kit, retail therapy releasing dopamine, and get the dopamine release of being with a group, right? That's connection. Meaning and purpose. Well, I'm, you know, some of the guys we do, senior at bank level, you know, one guy I can think about in particular, very senior at a global bank. And he's like, I'm not challenged in my role and I could do it in my sleep. And I was like, no wonder you want to have a drink. I want to have a drink just listening to you, you know? So the thing is with him, it's like what we need to do. Okay, he can't just suddenly go and change his role. He's built it up into something powerful. But what we've found is that most people, okay, so this is not everyone, but most people who end up having a compulsive behavior or certainly a poor relationship with alcohol and drugs, what they are is they are empathetic. Okay, so they have a high level of emotion and we're not taught how to deal with our emotions. Okay, our parents don't teach us and school definitely doesn't. So what happens is we feel emotions and then we want to numb it out. And so people who have a high level of empathy tend to go to alcohol and drugs more. But once you remove the alcohol and drugs is you've got somebody who has a lot of emotions and feels empathic towards others. And the bit that's missing to them, i.e. meaning and purpose, is a sense of giving back or a sense of hope, helping other people, which is why when you stop drinking, something like that, it's like, well, hang on a minute, I can't change my role, but maybe what I can do is make sure that I'm coaching or training people a bit more because I know that me giving back is supportive. Or maybe I can take a second job working as a volunteer somewhere because I know that I need to have a sense of meaning and purpose in my life. So these are all the things that need to be addressed.
I love it. I love it.
So we've dealt with the stressful day and how to cope with that. What about the, well, I'm going to a party, I'm going to a wedding, and
everyone's drinking.
I have to drink to have a good time, or I have to drink because I feel more relaxed and chatty, and I'm a bit shy and anxious, or I suffer from social anxiety and a drink makes me feel better. So what are some things that those people could do prior to an event or at an event rather than go on this autopilot of picking up a drink from a tray?
Okay, so remind me, because before we get on to what they do at an event, because we can go through the list of things there, let's talk about the process of changing your relationship with alcohol. So just like any behavior done repeatedly, even as a bad habit, creates neural pathways in the brain. Bad habits grow like weeds. So instead of just being like a good habit, which sits on the surface, a bad habit actually starts to link itself to different areas, your identity, your sense of belief, your sense of self, and all of those things. So it's complex. And the thing about that is that in order to change the map in your head, which has become alcohol equals fun. But by the way, that's from first age of starting to drink, certainly all the way through your 20s. What we were doing is really imprinting hard into this brain through, I mean, how many weekends and how many things? Alcohol equals fun, right? So that is incredibly ingrained. Your job is to break that math. You must. If alcohol equals fun, you're always going to want to drink in order to have fun. Yes. So if you think about how do I train my brain to have a different map of what fun is? I need to go and have more fun without alcohol, right? It's that simple. And so by doing that, every time I do that and I go, woohoo, that was fun. Literally, my brain's going, okay, shortcut. I must make that. That was fun. I'm going to keep doing that. And then later, when you're thinking about having a drink again or trying to control your drinking, you have two maps. Alcohol equals fun, but so does this equal lots of fun. Okay. Now, nothing more so than going out, right? If the only going out you do is drinking, how are you ever going to control your alcohol? You're not. You're just going to get there and feel incredibly triggered, bored, lonely, using willpower and hope. Well, willpower depletes. Stress eliminates willpower. It depletes over time. You require willpower for all decisions. Let's say you wake up in the morning and can't work out what to wear. You're using willpower. You argue with you try and hold yourself back from arguing with those annoying people at work. That's willpower. Get to the end of the day, zero willpower left. So you can't leave it to willpower. So all of this journey leads you to, while you're not drinking, it's really important that you get out there. And January is a perfect timing because the pressure's less, right? There's most people are not drinking. It's much more excusable not to drink. So that's the reason why it's really important for you to get out, have fun. If you're worried about going out where there's alcohol, there's still fun things to do that are not drinking. There's loads of sober meetups. Go onto meetup.com and find the get-togethers, the sober raves. I've heard Spencer Matthews is putting on, sorry, I can't mention probably, he's putting on something at the end of the month. So get out to those, go into a rave, not drinking anything, not doing any drugs, puts a brain of like, wow, that was so much fun, right? So you're getting it. And plus you'll meet some other people. Then actually going out, I think the key things are prior planning prevents piss poor performance. So thinking about when you're going out, making sure the venue has some good alcohol-free alternatives so you know what to drink. Again, our brains operate on autopilot. If you just turn up to that bar and you haven't practiced what you're going to say, know what you're going to drink, then your autopilot will just say, I'll have a pint of Stella, please. That happens so often. And someone gives them some pressure and you don't know what to say. If you're going out with a bunch of drinking people, then make sure you take out the ringleader, call them in advance, tell them what you're doing, get them on side. It'll eliminate a lot of the peer pressure. Thousands of tips and trips like that we teach in our programs. So my number one recommendation, it's always for somebody to sign up to something like 1 Year No Beer to support you on your sober curious journey. You'll just get there faster. It's that simple.
Great. Love it.
I love it. And you have a podcast, do you, Rory? Is that right?
Yes. What's it called?
Come on, plug it. Plug it to us.
1 Year No Beer. 1 Year No Beer podcast. I just recorded DJ Fat Tony. Yes.
Oh, I saw. I saw that on your Instagram.
Is DJ Fat Tony doing the sober rave? He's DJing at a sober rave. I read it this good week.
Good lad. He never mentioned that.
He did.
Oh, his story. I mean, so yeah, and we got some other really, really exciting guests. So yeah, come and check out the pod if you're thinking about taking a break from alcohol, just changing your relationship with alcohol. I tend to give lots of nuggets and neuroscience and support and all of stuff. This is something, as you can see, I'm incredibly passionate about, is helping people change their relationship with alcohol. I think more than that, I think it's helping people live a life where alcohol is just irrelevant. And that's also a take it or leave it situation.
And as I've been listening to you, it applies to every area of life, how you eat, how your relationship with work, your relationship with TV, your relationship with social media, it's your relationship with exercise. These skills that you're endorsing and teaching, they apply, they're life skills. They're for everything.
It is. Yeah, 100%. Exactly.
Rory, thank you. We are delighted that we got to pin you down. We know you're a busy man, so thank you for your time today. We got there. Yeah. I was absolutely determined.
How do people get in touch with you if they want more information?
So if you want to check out oneyearnobeer.com or facebook.com/OYNB, we're OYNB on Facebook, we're OYNB on Instagram. If you want to reach me personally, I'm Ruri@oneyearnobeer.com, or hit me up on Facebook, you know, Messenger, easy way to chat me. I am the only Ruri Fairbairns in the world. Thank Lord.
Wow. That's very cool.
I'm the only Lauren Mishcon in the world.
Hey, it's called something if your name doesn't exist anywhere. You're not a doppelganger, but a...
No. Yeah, don't know what it is, but it's cool.
Something. I walked into a party in the US, and this person walked up to me and went, Tim Ferriss! And I was like...
That's not terrible, like, though, is it?
He was like, oh. And he was like... took a picture, and he actually texted it to Tim saying, just met your doppelganger. So
you should have just gone along with it.
Exactly. Yep.
Rory, thank you. And we cannot wait. You are always welcome on the show. You're an absolute gem. And we can't wait to have you back.
Well, we need to start booking now because this one took quite a while.
We'll book you in for next January. See you then.
I'd love to be back. Well done on you guys doing, talking about this and inspiring other people to do this. And, you know, as I firmly believe, I really believe this is the number one for people. I think that, you know, if you crack this one, the other habits are so much easier to fall into place.